Glad's war, glad's war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your money when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Byron Peace. Welcome to Class War Battlefield Podcast. We are at this given time period in our lives, and I wish I had more information to actually explain this. This is something that I've kind of realized, but I don't have the information to describe it yet. Our general populace at this time is living a very, what I like to call, euthanasia. And it's not spelled traditionally, I'll get to that in a moment, style of life. And euthanasia is actually spelled with a youth. Y-O-U-T-H. Euthanasia. And I started calling it this. That, and also I started calling the general populace, in essence, zombies for the banks and for the corporations. We're both, actually. And, you know, I've touched on this before, but I haven't really given it too much explanation. We have a culture, and it's a corporate culture, that promotes dependency on our leaders, that we need to look towards experts. We need to look towards the leader for answers, you know. We are not as good as our leaders, we are often led to believe, that unless the leaders, whether they be in government, or actually, more matter-of-factly, I would say whether they be in government or corporate, but it's shifted, our corporations and such have shifted to the point where corporations validate government officials. So it's not even whether it's government or corporate, it's the corporations and the corporate officials, the bank officials, whatever, as long as they tell you that an idea is good, then you should run with it. Now, there's also another component to this. The wealthier you are, the bigger your say is in the importance of an idea or a person. So, if you live in a middle-class community where people are making $2, $3, $4, $5 million a year, your say as to the importance and the validity of someone's ideas counts way more than somebody who's living in a supposed middle-class community where the average people, I'm not even going to say average, but the median income there is $50,000 or $60,000, because it's odd, but it's like the more money you get as long as you are able to continuously amass it. So, like, each year you're making, you know, $2-3 million. As long as you're able to amass it, it's like it gives you the ability to mature in our society. The less money you have, the less mature you're considered to be. Money dictates maturity. So, for instance, I've observed this for years. So I'm speaking now from what I've observed. For instance, the people at the lower ends of the economic spectrum. You may recall that on TV, these people are often called the moocher class. You know, there was a time when these were called the working poor or just poor. But now they're called the moocher class. There's a hell of an underpinning to saying that. In essence, what we are doing is we're calling these people children. That they are children that don't produce anything for society. Now, you may take a little offense to that, but think about it. In a family, a child doesn't work. Somebody could legitimately argue that that child is a moocher off of the parents who are indeed bringing in money if we were just to look at the family as an economic vehicle, not as some entity that's going to actually nurture and build socially fit humans. We could absolutely argue that the child is almost parasitic to the economic life and viability of that family. Of course, one would say in response, but you have to invest in that child because that child's going to grow up and then be able to contribute more fully to the family. Well, that's the difference between our social family arrangement and real family arrangement. It's understood at the top of our socioeconomic structure, what we call class here in America, and elsewhere, may I say, that there is no social mobility, or there is very little social mobility when it comes to people at the latter end of the socioeconomic ladder. It is not expected that these children, these people who are part of the moocher class, you know, they don't pay taxes, even though they do pay taxes. We pay sales taxes and various other taxes. But it's understood that they're not going to mature very much. And if you don't believe that the term maturity has an economic value to it, just remember, when you have stock options that you can exercise, there's a mature date. When you have CDs that you have invested your money in, there's a mature date. When there is bonds, there's a mature date. So it's not a big stretch to consider one's economic standing as a form of maturation. So at the end there, you have the children. And then you have kind of the teenagers, the middle class. And it is amazing how teenage-like the middle class in this nation, I'm talking about the subscribed middle class now, not the median middle class, but the subscribed middle class, how teenage-like they are. They are kept in a state, and this is where the whole euthanasia thing comes from. This is, you can see our youth culture really impacting this group of people. They're kept in a state of impulsive desireship, which you tend to go through most notably in your teenage years, where you will on the impulse buy something because you just want it. You will on an impulse, out of lack of anything to do, aka boredom, you will on an impulse go with your friends drinking and partying and binging, and you know, it's just something that for some odd reason American teenagers do. You're seeing this in people who are in their 30s and 40s now. Even more suggestive of this kind of mentality that's, you know, changed towards this euthanasia culture. Movies where you have actors who are in their 50s still acting like they're in college, you know, in their 20s. Movies where you have, you know, people in their 30s still trying to act like they're in their early 20s. But you can even move away from the visual screen, from the movie screen. Look around you. You know, the whole idea of the cougar, you know, somebody who was kind of thrown off the shackles of marriage in their, you know, late 40s, the middle class housewife who, you know, raised her children and it's now time to go out and get herself a young stud. She's in essence living her 20s all over again. She isn't maturing. She's, I don't even know, do you call it dematuring or devolution or what? She's going backwards. And this is the second class of people now. They have a lot of money in the bank. So what the wealthy want to do is say, okay, take that money and spend it. And in order to do that, you have to get them thinking impulsively. You have to get them thinking impulsively. So they are the crux of the euthanasia group. And then the wealthy, you have two groups of people within the wealthy class, within the 1%. You have what I like to call the paternal group, which are the people who have generated wealth to the point where they are either first or second generational wealth builders. And I'd prefer personally to say that actually the paternals are more one generational wealthy individuals, because they're the ones who give hope to the youth. They're the ones who give hope to the middle class and say, hey, look, I could do it in this lifetime. You can do it in this lifetime. And thus, many people in the youth portion of our society, the teenage portion of our society, they strive for it. Some with really good consequences and others with terrible consequences. You know, they're always chasing that quick buck. So they're the ones who, they're the paternals, or some people might even say the bigger brothers or sisters, you know. They're the ones who definitely have the money and say, you can live up to this, right? And then you have the old money, the grandpa, the grandfathers, the grandmamas, you know. And that is the multi-generational wealth, where these people, they talk in coded language about how you can get to where they're at, but yet they never really tell you how they got there. And that's because they don't want people, you know, getting to the point where they're at. But so, there's some big drawbacks to organizing our society like this. First and foremost, outside of the grandparents, those at the top of the society, nobody is really or very few people are trying to set a course for our society as a whole, or even just our society, you know, as it is described in those segments. Very few people are putting visions together for those segmented societies or those segment parts of society. And the people who are, that are not part of that upper echelons of the society, the people who are usually demonized because they're asking questions that aren't comfortable. This is where the analogy of family gets dark. This is where the analogy of family gets darker. Because to understand our euthanasia culture, you have to also understand that the people at the top, at the tippy top, the people who are running the society at large, the grandparents, as it were, are very iron-fisted when it comes to maintaining control. And when somebody gets out of line in that family, or in this family, they make sure to knock them back into place. They make sure that that person understands the rules of the family. And so, these grandparents are, in essence, and in reality, very abusive. They use fear tactics to keep the rest of the family in line. Moreover, they only let, or they only encourage certain people to enter their echelons of upward mobility, you know. They only invite certain families to join. So it's already a packed house, but they're very strict on who they let in. So they don't necessarily want upward mobility. And they want to make sure that anybody from the paternal side, the mother and fathers of the family, anyone who takes their place, they have to be committed to maintaining the type of order that they've been committed to maintaining. So what this does is, because then they create an atmosphere of fear, now you have parents in the society, the middle class, who are the first generation, really, of big wealth generators. You have the first generation who then, because they're scared, because they feel threatened, they are abusive to the children. They're abusive first to the teenagers, which is the middle class. And they're dismissive, and they are verbally abusive. They may be spiritually abusive. You know, this is not necessarily easy to see until you put it in your mind that what is going on in this society is abuse. So you had a lot of first generation money makers with Wall Street who forget about being dismissive about the plight of you know, their younger brothers and sisters, the middle class, as we call it. They didn't care. They had to make money for the grandparents, and that's all they knew. As long as that house could stay standing via the grandparents, they didn't care what happened to the siblings, to the brothers and sisters underneath them. Moreover, as we've seen with Occupy, as soon as the teenagers started stepping forward and going, wait a minute, this isn't right, then the parents became the wielder of the steel fist and said, yeah, it is right, and you're going to get back in line. If you don't, we're going to put some pain on you. To Occupy's credit, yeah, they've been disbanded, but they aren't over yet. They aren't over yet. We have an abusive family situation in this nation. And, well, yes, I call the middle class youth-like. There is fast approaching a time when that youthfulness is going to burn up, when that innocence is going to burn up. Now, we haven't seen a mass mobilization of poor people yet, and the main reason for that is the grandparents have been smart. They bought and manufactured and distributed a lot of Sesame Street. And by Sesame Street, what I mean is a lot of puppets. And those puppets spew confusing rhetoric. And now I'm talking about conservative, corporate conservative puppets like Rush Limbaugh, like Ann Coulter and Sean Hannity and what have you. They've bought a lot of Sesame Street and they've sprinkled it among mainly lower class children. And they hype it as real. And they hype it as real. Now, the difference between Sesame Street and corporate conservative media is Sesame Street actually teaches you something that you can use in life. Corporate conservative media is only made to suppress the inner drives of human consciousness, of human dignity. It's meant to confuse the mind and to push down human endeavors, or not endeavors, drive. That's what it's meant to do. And it has worked so well. And do not miss this point. It has worked so well among people of a certain age, people over the age of 30, maybe even 35. I think it's, what is it? I know the demographic that most people love is 25 to 49, but it's a higher demographic that this is working on. And it's older. It's like 35 or 40 to 65 or something like that. Young people, it hasn't worked as well. So then, the second thing that the grandparents have invested heavily in is God. As those same people would have done when they were slaveholders, they invested in God to keep blacks in line. They've done the same thing with this new family arrangement. And essentially what God has been telling people, particularly the children, is don't rock the boat. I'm going to save you. I'm going to save you. And they've invested a lot of money in that. They've invested a lot of money in pastors and preachers saying, oh yeah, even though you're being whooped, even though you're being beaten by your parents and by your siblings now, because the siblings are angry. So many of those siblings are now extracting revenge onto the younger siblings, and this is called the police force. But even though you're having all this done, even though there's this horrible abuse going on in your home, isn't it great to be loved by Jesus? Isn't it great that God blesses you? Isn't it great that God loves you, even though you're getting your butt kicked? Just give all of your worries to God. Don't do anything about it. keep the problems of your home in your home, is what these pastors are saying. See, but many of these children don't realize that these pastors, their churches are funded by the grandparents, their pews, their paychecks, their homes, their cars, all via the grandparents. All via the grandparents. This is our social structure. This is who we've become. It's a little scary when you think about it. Because it's easy to say, you know, that euthanasia, that youth culture is just driving a wedge into the heart of the middle class and dumbing them down and making them more impulsive, making them more teenage-like. It's easy to say that. But when you really start to contextualize what is going on in our society, it's a frightening little picture. Especially when you do realize that it's been a conspiracy. These individuals have knowingly executed this. See, now most of us, when we have been taught via our wonderful media that conspiracies don't happen. You know, if you believe in conspiracies and you're a conspiracy theorist and you're crazy. The problem is conspiracies happen all the time. There is a conspiracy within the government and within corporate chambers to enable George W. Bush in 2008 to give $16 trillion to the banks. There was a conspiracy. We didn't get to see exactly how that happened. It was done away from the public's eye, which is what a conspiracy is. It's done away from the public's eye. We know that there was a conspiracy with ALEC to push through Stand Your Ground laws and various other legislation across the nation. That was a conspiracy. We also know that the GOP, and truthfully I keep saying it, people don't like when I say it, but I'll say it again, and the Democrats, there's a huge conspiracy to disenfranchise voters this year. That's a conspiracy done away. It was planned and executed and done, it was planned and executed away from the public's eye, and we've only seen the tip of the iceberg with it. I was listening to a podcast from Greg Palast on it. It sends chills through every corner of my body, thinking about what these people are doing. But on the broader issue that I've been talking about, it is a conspiracy. It was a conspiracy to conglomerate the media, and then to push through all the nonsense that's been pushed through. I mean, we've redefined reality to be scripted. I mean, reality TV is a joke. It's a joke. But it freezes the psyche because it confuses the mind as to what is real and not. There has been, in essence, a psychological war going on. And, you know, war, anyway, has many facets. Many facets. And oftentimes, with class war, we don't talk about psychological war, but there has been a psychological war. And it's been a steady psychological war over the last, definitely 30 years, but maybe as far back as 50 years. We definitely know from the 70s, the Powell Memo talked about changing the attitudes of Americans to support capitalism and to denigrate and work against unionization and things like that. That really helps the middle and lower classes. But there's another part of the psychological warfare that we've only barely touched on. And we don't know a lot about it. And that psychological warfare is cultural. If you look at the documentary, Century of Self, you get a feeling for this psychological warfare. The modern version of which, I've kind of laid a little bit of this out with my new format, episode 3, on cronyism. It's really centered around entertainment, and it's centered around blurring the lines of fact and opinion, and blurring the lines between reality-based TV and reality or scripted TV, should I say, not reality, but reality-based TV and scripted TV. It's to the point, of course, where we can't tell when something is scripted and when something is supposedly reality. Most of the reality television shows that you see is in some way or another scripted. But people aren't sure about that. People don't know about that. The psychological war that has been exacted against us pits us against one another. So that the children are left in a state of almost disempowered infantilism, where the bottom rung of our society is criminalized for being moochers, for not producing anything. And yet, the majority of the service jobs that you'll see, and the majority of the low-end manufacturing and production jobs that you see, are held by these people, and yet they're said to not produce anything. Yet, if these same individuals were to organize themselves and sit down and not work for a day, let's see how much work gets done. Let's see if they really do produce anything. It's kind of like the Hispanics, because a lot of them are in this group who are said to be moochers and don't do this and don't do that. 2005, when there was immigration reform threatened, that was going to deport a lot of them, 10 million of them hit the streets, shut this nation down for a day. That whole thing went away. People forget about that. But I believe it was 2005. It might have been 2006. But 10 million of them hit the streets. It went away. It went goodbye. So much so that the government won't even touch it. They go now to... they have to raid these companies individually under the cover of night and without press around, just so they won't be threatened by 10 million... Well, really, they are Native Americans in the streets. But so we criminalize the lower class for that. And then we prop up the middle class. But at the same time, their true desires are downplayed. So they can't have unions. You know, unions is considered dangerous to their way of life, you know. In recent times, retirement has been just absolutely scrubbed, you know. I don't have to tell you about the amount of money that these people lost during the meltdown, right? But what is often overlooked is instead of the grandparents, the upper elite, taking responsibility for this, what did they do? They told these siblings, these teenagers, that their younger siblings, the infants, were the cause of all their problems. They're the moochers, remember? And then they're now fighting amongst each other, the infants and the teenagers, the children and the teenagers, and it's that psychological war is just marvelous, because while these two groups are fighting amongst themselves, the grandparents are just setting up for a bigger war, which they understand is coming, and it won't be psychological, it will be on the streets. Because now the grandparents are saying to the younger kids, as it were, that We're now taking away all these shiny things that you have, like your room, your bed, that car that you've been driving to get back and forth from work. You don't really need that. You might want to walk. Grandparents are going a little senile in their own old age, aren't they? They don't realize. Yeah, those teenagers may be a little bit afraid of losing their money, but you start taking away the bed, you start taking away the allowance, their ability to have rest time, all of that, sooner or later they're going to just, you know, go all Menendez on you, and it isn't going to be pretty, right? And some of you may not even know the reference there, Menendez brothers, but look it up. I can't really speak to the psychological war that's been exacted against the parents, you know, to the first generation money holders, because I'm not part of that class. And truthfully, I haven't paid that much attention or as close attention to them as I have with the middle class and the lower class. I meet people from the middle class and the lower class. I see people from that class. So I understand what's going on there. But I don't really see people from that upper class. I don't. Now, I suppose ultimately the psychological war that's been played against those individuals is meant to separate them and keep them separated from the middle class. But that's just speculation. As I said before, and I'll say again, we are a society which is, in essence, a family abused from the top down. Ultimately, I think what's going to have to happen is the children are going to have to realize that they're not children, that they're not powerless, that they can accomplish a lot of things by themselves. And they understand a lot more than the grandparents want them to believe. There's one thing that I've realized about the media. If the media keeps telling you something over and over and over again, it's probably because the opposite is true, or they're trying to cover something up. So the children are going to have to stop fighting amongst themselves and come together to build, you know, what they need, the infrastructures and such that they need. Because the grandparents are senile. It's time to realize that they're senile. And they don't have any idea what they're doing. They're working with the parents, as it was, to try to save this system, which, as I was listening to Richard Wolff earlier, and as Richard Wolff points out, the system collapsed in 2008. That's what they don't want to say, is it collapsed. It went down. Thus, what they're doing now, and what they don't want us to know they're doing, is they're building it back up. But they understand that the new system that they're building, it's not going to include a lot of people. And those people are going to be angry. And that's why the system that they're building is coming with a heavy dose of militarization. Because in order to maintain order, they're going to have boots on the ground to keep people from doing what people do when they get desperate, when they can't get food, when they can't get water. They get a little bit testy. And if you don't believe me, ladies and gentlemen, look around other capitalist countries. This is what capitalism leads to. This is only what capitalism leads to. So, that's what the children have to do. What about the teenagers? The teenagers have to stop being impulsive. The middle class has to stop being impulsive. One of the things that I often suggest to people, and it's difficult, and you will not believe how difficult it is I tell them, limit your television intake. Limit your even video intake. Nonsense video. Not videos that are tutorial. To 1 to 2 hours a day. If that. I like to say 1 hour. Because that's a real challenge. But, start at 2 hours a day. And then after a month, work down to one. And then start knocking off whole days without watching nonsense stuff, right? And what it will do is it'll start cleansing the mind and start leaving you open to think. And then I suggest that people start listening to real audiobooks that are going to teach you something. And I have some audiobooks. I have a list of audiobooks that I suggest. And I also suggest that they start reading more. That's how you get yourself to be non-impulsive. This whole thing with ADD and ADHD, while I believe there are some people with it, I believe the main reason why people are ADD and ADHD is because they have so much energy that is non-scripted, that is not being used for anything, that should be used for mental capacity. See, a lot of people don't realize it, but when you use your mind, you use a lot of energy. Your brain uses a lot of energy. So think about it if you're going through life and you're not using your brain that much. Imagine all that energy that you have left over. But that's where I believe a lot of this ADD and ADHD comes from. That and also the chemicals that we put in our food. It's shocking to me how much chemicals are actually in our food, but that's for another day. So the teenagers of this society, they have to become less compulsive and impulsive, should I say, not compulsive. And that will also mean taking in different music, because music really generates moods in the minds and in the body. So I listen to a lot of different variety of music, and I love listening to labor-inspired music and music with a deep message. A lot of people don't do that. A lot of people don't do that. And that's something that's missing, and I think that would help with the impulsivity. So now that we've talked to the children and the teenagers, what about the parents? The parents are going to have to realize that the grandparents are senile. And they're going to have to start moving towards helping the children build better homes. And by better homes, I mean better institutions, better structures, better foundations. And they're going to have to say the hell with the grandparents' threats. Now, there's going to be some pain with that. But what needs to be realized is, in a family where there's abuse going on, there's always pain in the beginning. Because the person with the most control over you, they don't want to let that go. So they're going to try to do everything they can to pull you away. However, with enough support, you can do it. You can do it. And as for the grandparents, well, after we stop giving in to their threats and their abuse, it's time they go away to the nursing home. Step back and watch the lives that we build, Grandma and Grandpa. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. This is very fun for me. I've been waiting for something to happen. I'm hoping to get a few more out in the next coming couple of weeks. Thank you for listening. This is Vimer Adish. You can contact me at Class War Battlefield Podcast at live.com. Remember, my peoples, send Grandma and Grandpa to the nursing home. Let's build some houses. Peace and love, my peoples. Peace and love. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV,
You hear one thing again and again, how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and they're alive.